This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A first in U.S. history, a former president has been arraigned on 37 felony counts related to his handling of classified documents. Donald Trump's lawyer on his behalf entered a plea of not guilty. More from CBS's Scott McFarlane.
Before the hearing began, the former president was booked. He was processed. Digital fingerprints taken. No booking photo. The marshals deemed it unnecessary. They think there's enough photos of Donald Trump out there to use for the purposes of his prosecution.
CBS's Robert Costa says Trump and his advisors have been working to shore up their legal team.
There is a lot of consternation in Trump's inner circle about how exactly to handle this, but Trump is adamant behind the scenes that he wants to fight this at every turn. There's going to be no plea agreement based on what we're hearing, and he is going to push his lawyers to have what are called pre-trial motions before this ever gets to trial to make sure the judge is aware that they believe the evidence compiled in this case has faults, and they want to try to get this case dismissed.
President Trump right now is speaking to a crowd at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, accusing President Biden of using the Justice Department to go after him, and calls the indictment the evil and heinous about power. Earlier at a Miami restaurant, he told a crowd there,
"I think it's a rigged deal here. We have a rigged country. We have a country that's corrupt. We have a country that's got no borders. We have a country that's got nothing but problems. We're a nation in decline."
And again, Mr. Trump calling the indictment the evil and heinous abuse of power. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg gets a firsthand look at the collapsed section of I-95 in Philadelphia after Sunday's tractor-trailer fire.
We're going to continue to be here every step of the way for as long as it takes, with both financial backing and any other technical support that's needed as PennDOT works to restore this.
San Francisco takes aim at a concealed firearms in public places.
We are a nation awash in guns.
San Francisco Supervisor Catherine Stephanie says firearms should not be allowed in sensitive public areas like hospitals, parks, and churches, even if gun owners have a concealed carry permit.
These are spaces where individuals should feel safe, free from the threat of violence.
The ban is backed by Celeste Perrin with Moms Demand Action.
Carrying a gun around makes you much more likely to use it or have that gun used on you or someone you love.
If passed, the law is likely to be challenged by the NRA. Matt Bigler for CBS News, San Francisco.
Cormac McCarthy won the Pulitzer Prize for his novel, The Road. His book, No Country for Old Men, was made into an Oscar-winning film in 2007.
It's either heads or tails. And you have to say, call it.
Look, I'm...
Cormac McCarthy's publisher says the 89-year-old died today of natural causes. This is CBS News.
Hiring is a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. A temporary agreement has been reached to allow roads crossing the Lac du Flambeau Reservation to remain open to residents living on non-tribal land. The town of Lac du Flambeau agreed to pay $22,000 to keep the roads open through July 12th. At issue are right-of-way easements that expired around a decade ago for access to several dozen homes. The tribe seeks $20 million for new easements. Multiple lawsuits are ongoing in federal court regarding the use of the roads. The state high school baseball championships in Grand Chute were delayed this morning because of rain. Division 4 will now play this evening. Division 3 has been moved to tomorrow, when Division 3, 2, and 1 will all play their semifinal games. The championships will be held on Thursday. And the state girls soccer championship will begin on Thursday at Eline Soccer Park in Milwaukee. Ashland will face top-seeded Edgewood to kick things off. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
More than 130,000 car accidents occur in Wisconsin each year. If you're in an accident and experience any injuries or losses caused by another, you may be entitled to compensation. Gingras Thompson & Wachs has over 35 years of experience in handling car accident cases. Their team of personal injury attorneys is dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTW Law.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
We think it has to do with changing levels of hormones. So it's not so much about just losing the hormones, but our ovaries are kind of sputtering as we're getting older. And sometimes they're just like, you know, here's a lot of estrogen. Now you get no estrogen.
Now I'm just going to have this vision of my ovaries yelling at each other.
Ethel!
It's your Ethel,
calm down.
What are you doing over there?
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
A kick out of this representative from Tennessee, Tim Burchett. I love how the Republicans are losing their mind over the Department of Justice doing their job. They've been overly politicized. They've been weaponized. The DOJ, boring bureaucrats. They've been weaponized. They're coming. Do you find it as interesting as I do that there doesn't seem to be a lot of leaks coming out of the DOJ? Now, understand, during the Trump year, it was like a sieve. And that was because the career people, the people who dedicate their lives, people like, you know, Renato Mariotti, who we had on the program last night, talked about his time there. What I find, the career people, they're invested in their job. They're invested in the DOJ. So if things are going off the wheels, they're going to do something about it. But if they think things are being operated properly, if they think that, you know, we're in both sides of the aisle, there aren't the leaks. It's not happening. So this is the weird kind of point that we're in. And I look at all the Republicans who are losing their minds talking about how weaponized the DOJ has become and how, like I said, you know, Ted Cruz saying, you know, the reason is Merrick Garland hates Donald Trump. Yeah, it's that simplistic there, Ted. But this Burchett said that, they're going to use every tactic available to stop the DOJ from being overly politicized. And, you know, hey, if we got to cut their funding, if we got to defund the Justice Department, if we've got to defund the nation's top cop, if we've got to defund the police, we're going to do it. Now, do you remember, like I do, the craziness? Do you remember the fun and the entertainment of Republicans going on and on about, you know, Democrats wanted to fund the police? And when it first came out, I go, that's a stupid thing to say. There's almost nobody talking about defunding the police. And the few people that I came across who said, no, we gotta take... I told them they were stupid. Don't do it. It's not going to happen. And Republicans, you gave the Republicans this great talking point, and they were able to beat Democrats up with it. And now the Republicans are talking about, we're going to defund the entire freaking system. Because, well, their criminal got caught. So I was thinking about this today, you know, and I was thinking about my grandparents again. You go back to the 70s. What if someone like Nixon would have gone, you know, they've weaponized, you know, how dare they question me? They've weaponized you know, the Department of Justice. They've weaponized the court system. They've weaponized all this stuff. You know, I'm as clean as the driven snow. Do you think the people would have stood for it? And the answer is no. Because we used to believe in accountability. I said from the beginning, I don't believe in defunding the police. I believe we fully fund them and we support them when they're not wrong. When they make a mistake, accountability. I remember a time when Republicans were the party of personal responsibility and accountability. They're not that party anymore. They're none of that anymore. They've been taken over by children. They've been taken over by power mongers and attention seekers with no policy chops, with no interest in moving the country in a positive direction or helping working people make it through the next day. They don't care. Republicans hate working people. Just look at what they're doing. And talking about defunding the institutions that run our government is quite remarkable. Because remember, conservatives used to believe in preserving institutions. They were the ones who, you know, we don't believe in tearing things down. The Republican Party right now is a bunch of radicals, sadly. And I keep saying, please, bring your party back to somewhere near the sane line. Just somewhere. I'm not even talking about fully sane. Just somewhere near. And, you know, we're in this moment. And I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Are you surprised that we're in this moment where Republicans are doing the things that they're doing, throwing the temper tantrums that they throw on the numbers? Look, there have always been the handful of attention seekers. There's always been the one or two. There was always the Ron Paul. There was always the Dennis Kucinich. There was always the one that was way out that, you know, that got the attention for a minute, that asked the question that was, that I argue back then had to be asked. But they, I think, believed that things had to get done. We've got people right now who the truth doesn't matter. Reality doesn't matter. And as long as it fits their narrative, they're going to, well, do whatever they want. I look at this thing with Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. Came across a video that I was just scrolling through today. And it's her, you know, during a committee assignment. It's her during a committee assignment saying that when she was in school, there was a kids brought guns to school and the kids had all these guns and it was all because Joe Biden was president at the time and signed the gun ban in school zones. And none of it was true. It was not even remotely close to true, but, you know, it sounded good. Let's go to the phones. What's your name and what's on your mind?
Hello, it's Alice.
Hey, Alice.
What I wanted to say was, I am not a bit surprised. We have steadily seen the Republican Party lose their minds over the past, I'm going to say, 35 years. Really, I think it started, I believe, in the 70s, and then it's just gained traction. And you're right. They lie as easily as someone changes their socks, I guess. I mean, they lie about everything. And it's just amazing how their base eats it up.
Like my grandfather always said, they'd lie when the truth would be better.
Oh, you're right. I mean, even when you can disprove to them, and I'm talking even, you know, when we've watched these hearings of different kinds going on, even when the facts are slammed in their face, like with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert in particular, they'll sit there and go ba 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 ba, and then, you know, come off with this whataboutism. It's just insane.
Yeah, No, but this is where it comes back to us, I think, Alice. I think we've got to demand more from our elected leaders. And I think Republicans, you got to take control of your party. Bring your party back to sanity.
Oh, I have to agree with you that, you know, and it seems to me that the more outrageous and insane that their candidates are, those are the ones that they seem to want anymore.
Yeah, that's the frightening part, isn't it?
It's crazy. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I mean, this is unfortunately the world in which we're in. And look, you know, does the left have some people out there? Sure. There's some folks who are out on the fringe that I think need to be reeled in a little bit, but not to the extent. Right now is about saving democracy. Right now is about saving the republic. But this idea we're going to defund everything and defund the things that ideologically we don't like, this is a new kind of a new moment. Just because, and I come back to, you know, today was the day, you know, Trump was arraigned. Justice is working. He will have his day in court. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've been waiting all day to talk to my next guest about the big perp walk. Was it enough? I got some emails from folks a little disappointed. A little disappointed by the turnout of crazies. We're expecting much, much more, or at least the media kept hyping up there'd be chaos. But I've asked my good friend Greg Pavas to come share some thoughts with us. Greg is the New York Times best-selling author. He is also the director of the movie Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman. You can check out all that stuff at gregpalast.com. Greg, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, glad to be with you.
So let's get your thoughts on the perp walk today. Was it good enough for you? Did you get anything out of it?
Well, I didn't expect to see the violence that some people were projecting. We actually have a guy, Zach Roberts, who works undercover inside the right-wing groups. So we've been tracking the crazies, and they deliberately stayed away from this one. So, but that doesn't mean that that there won't be violence at right. some point. I was just in Arizona at a Kerry Lake rally, and
That's got to be fun.
Undercover.
How can you be undercover?
Well, I changed my hat. I wore a cowboy hat painted with an American flag.
Wow. I got to get a picture of that.
Yeah, well, not yet. I still need that disguise. So instead of my investigative reporting. So we did that. But, you know, Kerry Lake is saying if they come for Trump, they're going to have to come through me and 73 million Americans, and most of us are active members of the NRA. Now, she wasn't saying that like we're going to be marching in the streets like the NAACP. I think she mentioned NRA for a different yep. reason. So the problem is, I don't expect the kind of organized activity that you had on January 6th. What I do worry about is nutcases trying to be heroes. Yep. If I were Jack Smith, I hope he has a lot of body armor and a lot of people around him.
Yeah, this is the thing. Yeah. I mean, I worry that the Dim are going to take the marching orders, because there was a guy yesterday that we talked about, you know, the caricature of Florida Man, who said, you know, this is going to make January 6th look like a playground. All we need's the order. And I don't doubt that that guy would, you know, if Trump said, get your gun and come to the streets, I don't doubt he would.
Well, here's what we have to be concerned about. Merrick Garland dawdled for 2 years before appointing a special prosecutor. And in fact, Jack Smith was not assigned to do the January 6th analysis of Trump's crimes. And there is a very obvious crime, which is that if you're a policeman and you're watching a break-in at a bank, you can't just sit there, chewing bubble gum and forgetting about it. You're responsible.
Right.
So failure to act is a very, very serious federal to carry out your federal duties is a very serious crime. So I'm waiting for Jack Smith on that. But he smartly divided his grand jury into two parts, one in Washington, which will probably take on the January 6th issues, which wasn't in his remit. But Merrick Garland cannot stop a special counsel from going where evidence takes him. In the case, so then he took the Florida route. Now I realize that's strategically difficult because you got a Florida jury and a Florida Trump judge. But he would have spent months and months arguing about whether the case should be in Florida and D.C. And he's more than aware that if Trump can kite this trial past the election, and if he gets elected, he will pardon himself on January 20th at 12:01 p.m. I have no doubt about it. So Jack Smith knows he's running against a clock. One of the things that I'm very disappointed in, I have to tell you, is that I was actually shocked that the Wall Street Journal came out and said this was a political prosecution, picking up the GOP line, even though they're quite anti-Trump, they don't want him to be the candidate. I think they realize he's going to be there. So they're coming up with this idea that it's a political prosecution. I want people to read that indictment. It reads like a novel. I've done a lot of work for Justice Department and others, and I've done racketeering cases. And I have to tell you, it's a beautifully written indictment.
I printed it off.
Yes. And one of the things people have to understand, Jack Smith had no choice. Let me give you a few things that the press seems to admit. To me, the number one thing, if I were going to the jury to put this guy in an orange outfit, is that he told his lawyer, there are only 12 boxes. They said, look, the archives and the Justice Department need to know how many boxes you have. The FBI wants to know how many boxes are there. And Trump said 12. And yet he was being sent cell phone photos. And I love the fact that the indictment actually has cell phone photos in it, not just attached. It's very unusual. They showed those cell phone photos that were sent directly and personally to Donald Trump by his so-called body man, who's now his co-defendant, Nauta. And they show 100 boxes. In one picture, I count 50. And Trump is telling him to move them, for example, to put them on to sneak them up on Air Force One. Not Air Force One, excuse me, his private jet. But then Melania complained because there was no room for all her luggage because they were trying to move from Mar-a-Lago for the summer up to New Jersey. And she said, oh, there's no room. So that she's literally like leaving a trail that we have these boxes which we're not supposed to have. And it's not minor stuff, you know, including, for example, he shows the plans to attack Iran.
Yeah.
To attack Iran to his publisher, Ghostwriter. They don't have security clearances. And so he says there's 12 boxes. He literally says, tells his lawyer, I'm not going to go to New Jersey with my wife. I'll stay here. He didn't have to meet with the FBI. But Trump, while they came to get the boxes, to look through the boxes, Trump personally came down and told the FBI, that's it, I'm an open book. So he didn't even have to incriminate himself. He didn't have to tell that lie. He wasn't expected to be at the FBI meeting. His attorney signed a piece of paper saying, here's the 12 boxes, and we found 38 documents, confidential documents. Here they are in a folder. He told Trump he had that folder. He wouldn't give it to Trump, the 38 documents. And Trump said, looked at the folder and said, well, go through it, and if there's anything really embarrassing, go. And he made a note to just literally throw away the documents.
Yep.
Now, it's true as he pointed out, that Hillary Clinton's lawyers deleted 38,000 documents for which they should be in prison right now. That's obstruction of justice by any measure. I'm sorry if people don't like me to say that, but this is not the same. That was Hillary Clinton's lawyers. This is totally different. This is Donald Trump himself saying destroy the evidence. Donald Trump himself sending dozens of boxes, hiding them in a bathroom. I love it that there's a chandelier in the bathroom. I guess he was expecting Putin to show up. He's hiding them in the bathroom. Then he's shifting them around to storage units. Then he's taking them off, stealing them. It's theft, by the way. He's stealing these documents from the United States government and sending them to his private thing. And what is the point of it? The point of it, it looks like he was showing that document about the invasion of Iran as a response to General Milley, who said, I was afraid this guy was going to invade Iran to stay in office, to create a crisis. Now we know what that's about. Obviously, he asked Milley for the plans to invade Iran. And so Milley was completely freaked out. And so it came out in a book that he was calling the White House every morning to the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, saying, we're not invading, are we? We're not invading, are we? Let's not invade. Let's land this plane safely. Let's not invade. And what Trump was doing was saying, oh, look, it was Milley's idea to invade Iran. Here's his plan. So, no, we have plans probably to invade Canada, too. But he was afraid. He was forced to give these plans to Trump. And here's the problem. We don't know where those plans are right now. I suspect that the Ayatollah knows where the plans are. Wow. That the Iranian government knows where the plans are, or maybe the Medellin cartel. Do you realize how valuable that is to him, to them? This is a get-out-of-jail-free card for anyone. This is dangerous stuff.
Do you think he sold them? Do you think they found their hands? They found the stuff in other people's hands? Because I've said from the beginning, I thought that this was really all about his ego. And he was, hey, look what I've got. And the fact that he showed them and said, hey, I shouldn't be showing you this. You shouldn't be seeing this. Kind of feeds into my thinking. But do you think he actually sold some of this stuff?
Well, I know that's Tom Hartman speculating, but we can only speculate on that. I think it's so far we know what he's done. The reason he was showing off the invasion of Iraq, of Iran documents to his publishers who don't have security clearances, is that he's using this to respond to Milley. He says, see, Milley is saying that I wanted to invade Iran, but it's not true. I got this document from him. It's his fault. In other words, what he's doing is J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah. He's got all these documents. So if someone says something, he's got these secret documents, which he thinks will protect him. So it'll protect him against charges from the General Milley. Remember, Milley was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the guy who got conned into taking that walk over to the church and tear gassing protesters to clear the way. And he's apologized all over the place since then. He's totally embarrassed by this business with Trump. So he hates Trump and he was really afraid of what Trump might do. So Trump needs to use these documents the way J. Edgar Hoover did. I've got something over your head. I've got documents. You don't know what they are. The problem is this is very, very different than when I hear that, you know, oh, Biden took documents, Pence took documents. Yeah, but the minute someone said, where are the documents? We want to go through them and see if there's confidential documents. They hand them right over.
Right back.
This guy lied and lied and lied, forced his he had these two lawyers resign. They had to. In fact, one of them is turning state's evidence. He has no choice. You know, lawyers are supposed to keep your confidence. So you say, look, here's the real story of what's going on if you're their client. What you can't do is ask a lawyer to participate in a crime and help you cover it up.
Nope.
That just makes them a criminal too. So they had to resign. They had no choice but to turn over this information to the Justice Department. So his own lawyers will be testifying against him. But, you know, that's still going to be very hard to get a conviction, just so you know. I just want to let you know right now.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. I think he will be convicted. I just don't think he's going to do any jail time.
Well, I don't know if he's going to do jail time. You know, so far, every person that's been convicted of withholding documents and hiding them has gone to prison. The only people that have gotten away, like General Petraeus, he showed his girlfriend and biographer his notebooks with the code in them, which he should have never done. But that was, you know, and he had to pay a $100,000 fine and had a criminal went through a period of criminal probation. But he did turn over, you know, when you know, when they asked him for it, he turned it all over. He confessed. All these guys have confessed. But no one who has tried to hoodwink the FBI that I know of, not one, has failed to go to jail. So, but the question is getting 12 people, and it must be unanimous with a Florida jury, and all you need is one maggot, one MAGAite, to say, I don't care.
No,
I'm not going to convict this guy. He's my man.
We're going to see.
And that's it.
We'll
He's
see.
Off.
Greg, appreciate the time, man. As always, great stuff. The website, gregpalast.com. If you want more information, thanks, brother.
You're the best. Thanks, Rick.
My good friend, Greg Palast. Quick break. We're back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1914. That was the day that the Miners' Union Day Parade was scheduled in Butte, Montana. In spite of the festivities, trouble was brewing down in the copper mines. Many of the miners were growing increasingly aggravated with the Butte Miners' Union Local 1, part of the Western Federation of Miners. Local 1 had been established in 1893, but some thought the union was too closely affiliated with the mine owners. Wages had been stagnant for more than three decades, despite the fact that the price of copper had more than doubled during that time. Mine owners stirred the pot even more by hiring Pinkerton detectives to infiltrate the union, instructed to promote violence. The day before the parade, 1,200 miners refused to show their union cards at the Speculator Mine. This meant that they were turned away from work. The next day, the miners' parade was met with jeers and taunts. Some of the protesters chased the union officials, who were riding in the parade on horseback. The angry crowd swelled and decided to attack the union headquarters. They ripped apart the union offices and tore out the union safe. They took the safe to a field and blew off the door with dynamite, finding $1,350 inside. Alderman Frank Curran tried to disperse the crowd, but they tossed him out of the second-story window of the union's office. Fortunately, he landed in a pile of carpeting that had been ripped out by the angry mob. He escaped with a broken arm and dislocated ankle. 10 days later, an unknown assailant blew up the Miners' Union Hall. Citing the violence they had encouraged as an excuse, the mining company declared it would no longer recognize the union. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Why would your local newspaper not even mention an important local news story? Perhaps because it's a damning story about the conglomerate owner of the paper. This month, hundreds of journalists working for major dailies in some two dozen cities across America joined in an extraordinary mass walkout from their jobs. They were protesting the rank greed, gross mismanagement, and abandonment of democratic duty by the owner of their papers. That owner is Gannett, a massive financial conglomerate that has grabbed control of more than 200 dailies in 43 states. This is a huge, multidimensional news story about news itself. But where was the coverage? Big story number one. Unbeknownst to most people in these communities, they no longer have a local daily paper. Control over everything from news content to price now belongs to bean-counting strangers at Gannett headquarters hundreds of miles away. Big story number two. More fundamentally, control has moved from journalists to bankers. Gannett is owned by SoftBank, a Japanese hedge fund that has rapaciously looted American newsrooms to grab extravagant fees, salaries, and profits for its rich financial hucksters. Big story number three. The workaday hometown reporters, photographers, and others who actually produced Gannett's papers are making a gutsy stand against the profiteer, not just for themselves, but for the essential ideals of journalistic integrity and grassroots democracy. Biggest story of all. Gannett's 200 papers cravenly joined in a concerted blanket cover-up of this story, stiffing the public they're supposed to serve and disrespecting the ethical stand of their own employees. Even Gannett's flagship paper, USA Today, which regularly reports on other labor actions, took a dive on covering the journalistic malfeasance of its own overseer. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight hedge fund corporatization of journalism, go to newsguild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday we talked about the guy who, you know, basically looked like your caricature of Florida Man. And he said that, you know, January 6th was going to look like a playground. Today, all they need was the order. Because they're at the ready as Trump was ushered through and out. He was not going to be held over. It went exactly as everyone planned. I'm here to share some thoughts on what the spectacle was. I've asked Lauren Windsor to come talk with us. Lauren is the executive producer of The Undercut, the executive director of American Family Voices, and also a partner over at Democracy Partners. Lauren, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So give me the sense. What did we see today?
So, I mean, generally speaking, it's another one of these big hype protest events where you get there and it ends up being, you know, almost, you know, one for one media to protesters. There was a lot of media staked out around the courthouse and, you know, spanning the traditional media, you know, broadcast, you know, digital print, but like, you know, streamers and, you know, more independent grassroots journalists. So I would be surprised if the protesters, you know, outnumbered the media presence by too much.
Yeah, well, all the people looking to capture the insanity. Which kind of, you know, that's kind of the interesting play that you see in a lot of these events. And I've gone to a number of them over the years where I remember when Joe, the unlicensed plumber, came here to Harrisburg, and there were like six of them and like 300 of everyone else. And I guess that feeds into our want to see craziness.
Well, there was a lot of crazy. I mean, there were people more so on the right than the left, but you know, there were counter protesters there for sure. Supporters of Trump were the majority, and you know, a lot of them were very it had a circus type atmosphere to it.
Well, so. Hello, have you been here since 2015? Are you new? It's kind of been a circus.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's, you know, not your sort of, I think, the typical conservative you would picture, you know, it was very much more like fringy shirts that say crazy things about Biden and the Biden crime family. Trump won, get over it, losers. Yeah. There was a counter protester named Xavier that I thought was hilarious, but he had this suit on, and all over it said, you know, F-U-C-K Trump all over the suit. And he had two different signs, and one of them was Happy Birthday, Trump, F-U, and the other sign said, DeSantis is a P word. And so he attracted a lot of attention all day.
Yeah, these events are for people who, you know, their parents must not have loved them enough or held them enough as children that they have to do these performative things to get attention. At the end of the day, for me, though, it's about someone being held accountable who has never in his 70 plus years on this planet been held accountable. And as I said yesterday on the show, this is a guy whose parents never told him no, an example of bad parenting. And look where he is all these years later, finally, possibly, maybe being held accountable. I'm curious your thoughts of the event that happened inside the courtroom. Were you near any of that?
No, I mean, you couldn't get anywhere. It was a large perimeter around the building itself. We were stationed in front of the entrance when he arrived. So when Trump arrived at the courthouse, the motorcade went down underneath. It was into a parking garage that's underneath the facility. And so we saw that come in through the back. You didn't see him get out of the car or, you know, get into the car because all of that was underground.
Yeah. Some of the images that came out of it, though, he didn't look good. And you know, look, you know, he's taking it from all sides. And this is what happens, you know, maybe when you crime. Maybe don't do that.
Yeah, maybe don't. I mean, I think that his luck is beginning to run out. He has succeeded in, you know, being Teflon Don for so long that he just thinks that it, I guess, will happen and be that way into perpetuity. But, you know, losing the election to Joe Biden removed some of that Teflon. And now we're seeing, really, I mean, when you've lost John Bolton, his former military advisor, is now, you know, on, you know, cable television, cable news, talking about how, you know, bad it looks for Trump. I think, you know, when you've lost John Bolton, it says, speaks to the degree of that you're in.
And now you've got, Alan Dershowitz, who has come out and said, you know, it's not, maybe not a smoking gun, but it's a gun with fingerprints on it.
I think it was Bill Barr that said that if half of what was in the indictment is true, that Trump is toast. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's not just his indictment, though. It's, you know, the hush money payments, it's Georgia, it's January 6th, it's also being investigated by Jack Smith. You know, even though Trump drew Eileen Cannon, one of his appointees who has acted favorably, ruled favorably for him in the past, you know, I think that it defies any logic, rationality, sanity whatsoever for him to be able to avoid all of those things. So I don't know, all the lawyers that I follow on Twitter, that I talk to, you know, about this, what they think is going on is, you know, that he's facing serious, like, prison time, that he's going to go to prison.
No, I don't think he's ever going to prison, but I think he will be found guilty. I just don't know that we're, I got to think Biden at the end of it will do something. I just don't see a president going to jail. I know a lot of people are angry with me for saying that, but I just don't know that happens. So I don't want to get the hopes up, because we've been hearing this a lot, Lauren, over the last, 6 years. They've got him. Mueller's coming. He's going to resign. I've heard all of this stuff. Today was an important day because he actually was indicted. He actually was arraigned. He is going to stand trial at some point. And that's an important thing, I think.
It's very important, but, you know, I think it's, for me, it's more important to have the verdict, like, come in before the election than after the election, because I just think that he needs to face a jury before, you know, every Republican candidate running is going to eventually line up to say, I'm going to pardon him. This is, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy was on site today, and, you know, he was the first GOP contender to say that if he won the nomination and won the presidency, that he would pardon Trump. And he called on every other contender for the GOP nomination to do the same thing. And so it's crazy to me that, you know, this is going to become a litmus test for the field to say, oh, I'll pardon him on the first day, or I'll pardon Trump, period, whatever. You know, I would like to see some justice served and not, you know, just like this becoming a political bargaining chip.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, to get a pardon, don't you have to, you know, admit to some things? I mean, isn't there a process by which you have to take some bit of responsibility? Something? Maybe ask one of your lawyer friends that. So last question I've got for you, you know, in looking out at this, now that it's over, was it all that we were expecting? I mean, there was a lot of hype. This was going to be revolution. There were going to be armed people in the streets. Did it meet that level of expectation?
I've been in some hardcore protests, you know, like tens of thousands of people.
I know you have.
And over the past decade of you know, being in the field, chronicling grassroots movements, this was not exceptional. The only thing that made it exceptional was the fact that it was, you know, a second, arraignment of a president, you know, like everyone was kind of like, oh, this is crazy. This is historical. You know, it's a historical moment, but, you know, it wasn't like super theatrical. There wasn't any sort of Revolutionary Guard. And thankfully, you know, we don't want to see like strife and violence in American streets. So I'm glad that it was a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it didn't live up to the violent hype that people wanted to say was going to be there.
No, I'm with you. And the most disappointed person today that didn't happen is obviously, in my view, Donald Trump. But Lauren, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the amazing work you do. And I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, our good friend Lauren Windsor. I want to get your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show for working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1991. That was the day that a San Francisco man, Jeffrey Collins, received $5.3 million for wrongful termination from Shell Oil. The judge ruled the company had fired Jeffrey because they found out he was gay. Jeffrey had been a second-generation Shell employee. His dad worked for the company for 37 years before retiring. Jeffrey worked for their Triton Biosciences division. He oversaw a team working on developing drugs for cancer, AIDS, and other diseases. For 19 years, he had received positive reviews and 9 promotions. He rose to become the second highest executive for Triton. All of that changed when management found an invitation to a party for gay men that Jeffrey planned to attend. And for that, they fired him. The company claimed they made this decision after reevaluating his performance. They stated that they felt Jeffrey could not be effective as a leader once his team learned of his off-the-job activities. After his firing, Jeffrey could not find a similar job. Despite all of this, he was willing to settle out of court for far less money. But Shell decided to fight the wrongful termination charges. Cases such as the one brought by Jeffrey helped to bring to light the employment discrimination faced by many in the LGBT community. Since his case, California, along with 28 other states and the District of Columbia, have passed laws prohibiting firings based on sexual orientation. 32 states have laws against discrimination based on gender identity. 434 of the Fortune 500 companies have implemented similar policies. Yet, despite these gains, protecting and improving LGBT rights on the job remains an important fight for today's labor movement. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at laborhistoryin2. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something near mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Number of emails from folks saying, you don't sound like yourself. It's because I'm sick. Got the COVID last week. I'm on day, I think this is day 6, what, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, day 6. I think I'm over the hump. I'm on the right side of things. Gonna make it, much to the chagrin of several folks who sent me, well, ill wishes, I know I wouldn't go out of my way to write something for someone to, I think what my mother would say. I'd be waiting for that smack in the back of the head. Anyway, Pete from Santa Fe sent me an email saying, Rick, I heard you tell your caller that Trump will not accept responsibility. If you really believe Trump will never accept responsibility, why do you think GOP candidates say they'd pardon him? I assume he's talking about, Trump, in order for him to get a pardon, he's got to fess up. No, I don't think he's capable of doing that. And I've said that from the beginning. I remember It's been a couple years. It was, you know, like I think the third year of Trump's presidency, where the whole big thing was he's going to resign. He's going to resign. And it was like for months. I have guests come on and they would tell me he's going to resign. And I'm going, he's never resigning. Stop that. His ego would never allow him to resign. And look, I don't use the word never very often, but this is one of those things where his ego, I don't believe, will allow him to even to save his own skin. I don't think it's something that's in him. But answering the question, Pete, if I really believe that, you know, he won't accept this, why are these candidates saying that they will? I think it's simple. It's the litmus test for his next VP. Because, you know, even though I drive through my neighborhood and there are Trump Pence signs all over the place, I know Pence not going to be on the ticket. And that's the weird thing to me. Nobody's gone out and cut out the Pence part. Very, very twisted. But I digress. I think this is going to be one of those things where if he's picking a VP, it's got to be on the record that at least he'd have the out in the event that maybe, you know, maybe possibly, you know, if you know, given the right angle and the right PR fit, that he could get out. I think that's what this is. I think this will be this part of the sweepstakes to be VP. You know, part of that push to go, hey, look at me. Look how Trumpy and I can be. So that's where I'm at. Got another email. No name attached. And I wish if you're going to send an email, at least make up a name. At least make up a name and tell me where you're from so I can address you properly. But Rick, this email writes, you seem to be a trans activist. Do I? I mean, really, do I seem to be a trans activist? Do I look like a trans activist? I don't think I am. I'm for people living their best lives. I'm for people doing whatever the heck they want within the confines of their four walls or within the frame of their body. As long as it doesn't infringe on my rights or someone else's. Yeah, then if that's your definition of a trans activist, then okay, I'll take it. They sent this thing, said, what do you have to say about this story? I'll bet you don't comment. So I got a comment. Evidently, this trans advocate, Rose Montoya, who I've never heard of, evidently the AP story says that this person is no longer welcome at the White House or the events that they have because they posted a social media pics topless, I guess with two other people, at the Pride event on Saturday. I don't care about this. I know, but Rick, you're talking about it. No, someone said, I bet you don't comment, and I'll comment. I don't care, and we shouldn't care about this. This isn't a big deal in my world. They did something, they're going to be held accountable for it. If anything, we should go, good on Biden. You know, invited people, they acted up, sent them away. Boundaries. Wow. That's the sign of, what's that L word? Oh, yeah, a leader. Maybe we had more of this. Maybe. Now, to address your whole, he's a trans activist. If that's what, you know, what makes you angry, I mean, okay. If that's what you need, okay. What I believe, and I've said this from the beginning, I believe people have the right to pursue their happiness. And whatever that is, God bless you. Do your thing. You know, we used to believe this. I mean, we as a society, we did. I remember it. You know, there was a whole do your own thing. You remember? And we, you know, we may have chuckled. I tell this story all the time. I was at one of the, you know, the big box store, you know, home improvement centers. You know, the orange one. And I'm walking down the lumber aisle. And I'll never forget it. As long as I live, I'm never going to forget this. There was a guy who was bigger than me. And to be bigger than me, you're a big dude. Giant beard, hairy legs, just a massive mountain of a man. In a dress. A nice yellow sundress with a floppy hat. Had the little purse. Work boots. And that's what made me laugh. And I'm looking at the thing and I'm going, work boots. Like, good on you, buddy. And I walked on my way. Happy for this person. That, you know what? That made them happy for the day. They got to be themselves. Who cares? Now, again, did I laugh? Yeah, I thought it was a funny sight. And I still think it's funny. But should we fire that person from their job? Should we throw them out of their home? Should we ostracize them? No, absolutely not. I may not agree with what everyone does, but that's the beauty of this country, that we've all got the right of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We have an opportunity to lead our own journey. And if that means you want to put up makeup and you want to put on a dress, or if you, that means you want to go and rearrange your plumbing, that's on you. This idea that we've got, you know, people, you know, Christian conservatives telling everyone how they should lead their lives without looking at themselves, that's a problem for me. And I will stand up and help fight for people who are being abused in the streets and people who are being fired or mistreated. Now, you're not going to catch me out on the Pride Day rallies. You're not going to catch me out there, you know, parading around. That's not my thing. But I'll fight for those people to be able to do it. I was talking about this a little bit earlier. And, you know, it came up during the conversation because there are a lot of colorful figures who show up at these. And I don't understand the reason to, you know, to dress up in really obnoxious outfits and to be the most extreme of the extreme. But hey, you know what? You got the right to do it. God bless you. I don't understand it, though. And the person I was talking to said, you know what I'd really like to see in these pride rallies? I'd like to see people showing up as doctors and lawyers. I'd like to see them showing up in their police outfits or their fire outfits. I'd like to see them showing up in their work clothes. Instead of the caricatures that a lot of people have framed them being, show that these are average, everyday people. These are your neighbors. These are your friends. This is your family. These are your children. Your parents, your brothers, your sisters. Yeah. So to say, well, you're a trans activist. I'm a human activist. I'm someone who says, if as long as what you're doing doesn't hurt anyone else, you've got the right to do it. And that may be the libertarian part of me, but it makes sense. And we're just in this weird spot where, man, yeah, it's that everyone's pointing their finger at someone else while not looking at themselves. You know, I love Republican policy of let me tell you what's wrong with you. Let me tell you how to fix you. And you look at the things that they do, it's angering. And this is where, if you're going to call me a trans activist, I will wear that. And I'll wear it proudly. Probably not with a big bouquet of roses and a big flashy display. But if it means standing up and fighting for people who are being oppressed, who are being abused, who opportunities are being taken from just because they're a little different, then yeah, put me in that activist camp. But here, if you expected me to go, no, I'm all on the side of this person who went topless. This is an egregious violation. I'm not going there. Because there are boundaries, there are borders, there are things that you should be held accountable for. And thank goodness we got an old guy in the White House who understands that. Maybe this is what needs to happen. Maybe Biden needs to get the strap out, get a switch off though one of the cherry trees and marches himself down to the Capitol. He's calling for violence. No, I'm not. I don't think Biden could get the switch off the tree. And I love Joe Biden. I'll be honest. I think, honestly and truthfully, best president of my lifetime at this point, has done some things that I think are really, really important and in the coming years are really going to pay dividends. It's something that really, if once we get past the red hat, blue hat stuff, and if we look at it objectively, I think Biden has done one heck of a job. and history will remember him well. That's my views. I want to hear yours, though. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you want to call me names or ask if I'm an activist, by all means, I want to hear it. And if you dare me, I'll bet you won't comment on this. I can pretty much guarantee I will. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Thanks for putting up with my COVID and my coughing. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.